This is Melanie Diesel, author of the Content Fuel Framework, How to Generate Unlimited Story Ideas. And you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which was named by Forbes as one of 11 smart podcasts that will keep you in the know, and named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer. My goal for this podcast is to help us both keep up with the latest ideas in the quickly changing fields of modern marketing and sales. And don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since you're a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or some other helpful resource that I know of for whatever situation you find yourself in, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat and I'll try to point you in the right direction and save you some time. And if you have a question that I can answer, email a voice recording to me at douglas@salesartillery.com and I might play it and answer it in a future episode. I'd love to hear from you. And now, a word from our sponsor. This show is a labor of love that I do in my spare time. My day job is running a marketing agency called Artillery, where we work primarily with manufacturers and industrial companies who call us in when they're serious about growth, but have realized that their old school marketing and sales is almost completely ineffective at attracting the modern buyer who doesn't want to be marketed or sold to. In our engagements with clients, we take a sales-based approach to their marketing and help them align their sales and marketing around their most profitable target customers, arm the sales team with technology to make selling easier, create sales content that makes buying easier, not to mention getting better results on Google, and then show them how to insource as much of the marketing as possible. For more about us, visit salesartillery.com. And now, on with the show. Today, we welcome Melanie Diesel to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about her book, The Content Fuel Framework, How to Generate Unlimited Story Ideas. Melanie Diesel is a keynote speaker, author, award-winning branded content creator, and lifelong storyteller on a mission to share the power of compelling and credible content with others. As the first editor of branded content at the New York Times T Brand Studio, Melanie wrote sponsored content pieces that won multiple awards. She was a founding member of the Huffington Post Partner Studio, the digital publisher's brand storytelling team. She also served as the director of creative strategy at Time Inc., building branded content strategy across over 35 U.S. media properties like Time, Fortune, People, Sports Illustrated, Entertainment Weekly, and more. Melanie speaks at conferences and events around the world, at least until a few weeks ago, teaching tens of thousands how to think like journalists and tell better stories. And interesting facts, she can speak American Sign Language, and she was a state-level javelin thrower in high school. Melanie, congratulations on the Content Fuel Framework, and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be here. It's good to have human contact in this crazy world that we're living in right now.
Yes, thank you. And my family thanks you for talking to me because for once, you know, they're excited that someone else will talk to me. So you're doing a service to humanity, I've got to tell you. And I was so excited when I got your book. I saw that it was endorsed by so many people that I've had the honor of interviewing, like Jay Baer and Ann Handley, Mitch Joel, Robert Rose, Lee Oden, Ron Tite, Joe Lazauskas, and even a few other folks that I've had the pleasure of meeting but haven't interviewed. But I have to call out a listener in Michigan, Alexandria Trusov. She's a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast. She messages me all the time with ideas and questions like a lot of listeners do. And she said, I saw Melanie speak. I've got her book. I've read it. You've got to interview her. And I said, man, thank you so much. I get the best recommendations from listeners. And I'm just wondering why all those guys those folks that I've interviewed, why they didn't tell me about it. Trust me, Melanie, the right people will be disciplined for this. So now your last name is Diesel. It's spelled D-E-Z-I-E-L. But
yep.
I thought I was the first one to figure this out. But Diesel and the book is called The Content Fuel Framework. Was that kind of what was going on there?
You might be onto something there. Yeah, my company is called Story Fuel as well. A little play on words there just for fun. And yeah, the Content Fuel Framework. But it's also, I mean, you know, it's I'm trying to be as transparent as possible about the promise. And that's that this book is going to give you a framework that will fuel your content creation. So
right. And it even if your name weren't Diesel, it would have worked 100%. But I just thought, hey, you're trying to get one over on me. So
wink and a nudge.
Yeah, yeah. So this book, and I was going to read something from it here in a second, but we're already stealing from it because we've got this one client that goes on a fiscal year that starts in the middle of the year, and we always do some planning beforehand, a lot of content planning. This is already going up on the whiteboard, and we're going to talk about all that so people will understand what we're talking about. But you're a journalist, and my content director is a former journalist, and I don't know why more businesses don't take advantage of the fact that there are so many former journalists out there who really make some of the best content marketers. And that's one of the premises of what you talk about here.
Yeah. I mean, goodness. And if there's any, you know, business folks listening who are trying to build out content, please take our word for it. Go find a former, recovering, you know, furloughed, whatever the case may be, journalist, because they are the most talented storytellers who are not precious about their work. They're open to being edited. They create well on deadline. They're very independent and resourceful. And like, my goodness, what else could you possibly want on your content team? You know?
That is so true. And when I hired Pete a couple of years ago, he was working at the business newspaper, and I remember he was thinking, oh gosh, I don't know that much about, you know, digital marketing. And I just said, Pete, I can teach you that in a few months. What I can't teach you is how to write, how to interview, how to meet deadlines, how to think about your audience. He was like, really? I said, yeah, you've already got the hard stuff, brother. So anyway, I want to do something I rarely do. I wanted to read the blurb on the back of the book. I thought it was great. Never before have we consumed as much content in as many forms and in as many places as we do now. This means marketers, creators, and anyone who communicates with an audience is under more pressure than ever to deliver unique content consistently. How can you fill all those web pages, social feeds, blogs, and newsletters every single day? In the Content Fuel Framework, trained journalist and award-winning content marketer Melanie Diesel shows how to maximize your creativity by systematizing it. This simple framework catalyzes the brainstorming process, making idea generation effortless and nearly automatic. No more writer's block. No more asking, what should I post? No more waiting for that big idea to show up in its own time. This system allows storytellers from any industry to produce fresh story ideas on demand anytime. The Content Fuel Framework will challenge you and enable you to tell stories in entirely new ways. And you know, there was another book on the show a while back by Alan Gannett called The Creative Curve.
Yeah.
And it was all about, for those that haven't heard the interview, all about the creativity. And one of the big takeaways for me is that there's a system.
Yes.
And that came to mind with your book very much. And I haven't given this book yet to my content director because I wanted to finish the interview, but he's all over this. He's going to be using it. Now, he thinks about a lot of these things. But I wanted to ask you, at the very beginning of the book, you say every single day more than 500,000 new websites are created. Hundreds of hours of video are uploaded to YouTube each minute. Thousands of tweets are sent each second. There are more than 700,000 podcasts, each releasing new episodes all of the time. You said that this brings to mind some big thoughts, some significant ideas. Talk about some of those.
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing that when I hear stats like that, and you know, there's always new ones rolling out, the first thing I think of is how lucky we are to live in a time where content has been, you know, so democratized that all of us now have the capability to create, to share, to distribute content, that there's no gatekeeper between our ideas and the world anymore. And that hasn't always been the case. You know, there was a time not that long ago where if you wanted to share something with the world, there were 15, you know, gatekeepers in a year and a half between you and the world. And that's just not the case anymore. And I think we're so, so lucky as communicators of any type to live in a world where we have access to that. So that to me is like the biggest blessing, the luckiest thing for all of us, that this is the time in which we live.
Mm-hmm. And yet I think there are a lot of maybe older business people, but so many still have that mindset of, oh, we've got to go through a gatekeeper.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it can be intimidating to have that level of freedom. I can certainly understand that. And again, if you're not a content creator by trade, then suddenly this feels more like a responsibility than a privilege. And I can totally understand that.
Yeah, yeah. And you talk also about the content consumption has become more audience-led rather than the other way around.
Well, if you mentioned before 700,000 podcasts, I mean, surely our audience is having to make some tough choices about content of all types that they choose to consume or not. You know, it's never been more important that your content is differentiated. It's never been more important that your content is compelling and credible, because there are so many choices. And I know it's trite, people say this all the time, but we're not just competing against the next closest podcast or the most similar blog to us. We're competing against, you know, text message notifications and, you know, TikTok now all of a sudden, you know, so there's a lot of competition for our attention. And so, you know, it really comes down to customizing what it is that you create for your audience's needs.
Yes. And I like to say that we're all competing with cat videos. So
this is true.
Yeah. I mean, actually for me, it's golden retriever puppies, but those cat videos are pretty darn funny. So in the, also in the beginning of the book, you have these three big questions, and I've heard them from clients and friends and all kinds of people that are sort of intimidated by this whole, you know, idea of creating our own content, you know, because it always seems so much easier just to write a check and do advertising and then something would happen. But it says, like I mentioned earlier, where are the ideas going to come from? What if I can't think of anything new to say? What if I'm just not creative enough? And that's where I wanted to talk about the focus and format idea. And I was wondering if you could explain that, and also why the focus actually needs to come first, because you remind readers that most people try to start with the format first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the system in the book that I talk about is the fact that the reason we ask those questions about where will the ideas come from or what will I say is because, unlike most every other part of our business, we don't have a system for coming up with ideas. We're waiting for a muse, or, you know, we hope we sit down in front of the whiteboard and something just happens, or, you know, we doubt that we can do it at all. And the reality is, anything is more effective when there's a system and a process behind it, right? That's why we put systems in front of the things that are most important for us in our lives. And so the key challenge to having a system for content creation is that we don't really have a shared language around how we talk about content ideas. You know, if I ask 100 people to define a content idea, I might get 100 different definitions because we're all working in our own little bubble. And so what I try to propose here is that if we adopt this framework, this idea that every piece of content has two elements, the focus, what it's about, the lens through which we're telling that story, that's a really, you know, the message and the approach, and then a format, the way we bring it to life, and that's, you know, video, audio, things we do have a shared language about, then all you need to do is decide which focus and which format it is, and you've got a complete story idea that you can then bring into production. And so what we really want to focus on is choosing your focus first, because then you're deciding, what am I going to say, before you try to decide what's the best way to say it. And to your point, so often we start our brainstorms with, okay, I need a blog idea, or I need something for Instagram, or I need something for our YouTube channel, right?
Yeah.
And what you do is you end up forcing things that don't really belong there, or would be better served for you, for your audience, if they were in a different format. And, you know, I say this all the time, but we've all had that experience where you watched a video that shouldn't have been a video, and you're like, there's nothing visually compelling about this. Why am I watching this? I should just listen, or I should just read. Mm-hmm. It's sort of the content equivalent of the meeting that should have been an email, you know, where it's like, this didn't need to happen this way. And so when we start with format, that's what we end up with, a story that was probably better told through a different format. When we start with the focus, what is the story about? What are we trying to achieve? How are we going to approach the story? Then we can decide which format is best suited to that specific story. And, you know, as long as we're choosing from amongst options that include our platforms and our available places to post content, we end up with a perfect combination of the story we want to tell and the way in which we tell it.
So true. And what I want to do if this is okay with you, is I want to just mention what the formats are, because I really want to talk a little bit more about the focus. And the reason for that is because the focus is more important. And that's where it seems like where the atom splitting happens with so many of these ideas. So visualize, if you will, listener, and then we're going to give you links to Melanie's sites and so forth. But it's sort of like a multiplication table where you've got a column down the left and a row across the top. And the focuses are going down the left, and the formats are going across the top. Let me just bring open the page here.
Although page 16, I think. 17?
Yes, no, 16. Mm. Stick to your guns. So down the left are the formats. I'm sorry, and across the top are the focuses. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the focuses. But I'm just going to read what the formats are. And there's actually other formats, but these are the top 10 that are really the best to consider when starting out. So it's writing, and then infographic, and then audio, like what you're listening to right now, and then video, and then live video. And I'm going to have a question about that. And then an image gallery, and then a timeline, and then a quiz, think Cosmo quiz, and a tool like a calculator and a map. Now, we'll get to a couple of those later. But what I wanted to do was spend a few minutes talking about the different focuses or foci. I'm not sure. I'm sure I would have gotten that wrong in Latin class.
We had a big debate about this when we were editing the book. It was really a huge discussion, and we landed on focuses.
Thank you. Thank you. I feel better.
You're not
about
alone.
Okay. So what I wanted to do was ask you to, if we could just walk through and explain what you mean by these different ones, and maybe give one example and go from there. And I think what listeners are going to realize is they're doing some of these, or they've seen every single one of these, and that they shouldn't necessarily be ruling them out. So the first one is people.
Right.
So that's where you focus on a person, tell a story of a person, right?
Yeah, of course. So yeah, you read off the list of formats, and those are pretty familiar to us. We're content consumers, so we can recognize most of those things. The focuses are probably where the new stuff is coming to you, right? Like you said, a new way of looking at content. And the most common, and I think the most relatable for most people, is people-focused content. That's content that is, like you said, about a person, or it could be a group of people, you know, a team, a department, a company even. But the idea is that this content, we're really telling a story through focusing on the people who are in that story. So there's, you know, an opportunity for you to profile your customers, right? A profile of a customer is a perfect example. Profiling your employees, doing a whole day in the life about a specific person is another way to approach that. Oftentimes we see this about important figures, you know, in politics, in media, in sports, you know, just a whole piece of content about an individual person. And they're really the focus of that piece of content.
Right. So then, and humans like looking at pictures of other humans.
<That's> right.
We like people. And the next two are basics and then details.
Yeah,
so basics. Yeah, well, basics. Explain that. And so much of this is about explaining things from your customer's standpoint. And my fear is that a lot of companies think it, the basics more about us than about the problem the customer has.
Sure. Yeah. And I'm glad you put basics and details as a pair, because they are in so many ways. The idea with this is anytime you're looking to tell a story, to ask what is sort of the most basic approach to this topic, right? For people who don't have a base level understanding, who aren't familiar with the topic. Maybe they're new to your industry, new to your funnel, you know, new to being in the consideration phase of whatever it is that you offer them. So they need a more basic explanation of whatever that topic might be. The good example I like to give here is something like Bitcoin. You know, if you don't know anything about Bitcoin, I can't possibly become a customer of yours, you know, trying to get me to buy some until I have a much better understanding of what it is. And I need you to start at the very beginning. So, you know, providing basics focused content is really just giving an overview of the most important, most basic, you know, introductory information. And this content often is paired with more details-focused content that is for a more advanced audience. They probably already know that basics-focused information, the introductory stuff. They're looking for more of a, you know, a 102 versus a 101 level course. You know, they're the upperclassmen, so to speak, of your audience. You know, they can you can assume a base level of knowledge and provide them a more in-depth approach, more detailed information, more advanced information in that piece of content. So if we're going with our Bitcoin example before, you know, let's say that you are a much more advanced, you already have some Bitcoin, you're already in that space. You don't need the basics level content that I'm looking at. You want more advanced content that's giving you, you know, clearer information, more in-depth information that would probably fly right over my head. And so thinking of these as a pair, in many cases, when you might create one piece of middle-of-the-road content, you should actually create a basics-focused piece and a details-focused piece, so you're serving the two potential audiences equally.
Yes, and it occurred to me that another way of advocating for this is to say, look, it could be the same customer at just different stages of their journey of learning to make a smart purchase. So the next one is history. That's interesting.
History is fun. You know, so many times when we're telling stories, when we're creating content pieces, we're very focused on the present or maybe the future, you know, an ideal state of some kind. But sometimes it's so incredibly valuable to look backward and to look at the history, the backstory, the background, the journey that brought us to where we are now. And so, you know, I don't know why I'm talking about Bitcoin. For the love of God, give me a different example.
I'll give you an example. You've spoken at Content Marketing World. And as I recall, at one point they had like a poster or an infographic that showed the history of content marketing.
There you go. Perfect, right? So the idea is I could talk about the current state of content marketing, but maybe there's valuable lessons to be found by talking about the history and how we got to this point. You know, when any product, you know, you could do this about a product, an industry, a company, an individual. I mean, you can combine these focuses as well and talk about the history of a person, for example. The idea is that just that instead of talking only about where we are now or where we want to go, we turn the camera backwards, so to speak, and look to where we came from. And sometimes those sort of origin stories, background stories, you know, are so interesting. We see this in journalism a lot with public figures as well, where, you know, a candidate just suddenly rises or an individual rises in the public conversation and someone asks the question, well, how did they get to be, you know, the CEO of this company, or how did they get to be, you know, the candidate for this particular area? Let's look back to where they came from. And that's really valuable context for a lot of different situations.
Very interesting. And I'm just wondering out loud if this is one of the less flexed focus muscles is history.
I think so. Yeah, I think, again, we're often very focused on the now and then our ideal future state. And sometimes we miss the opportunity to reflect on what brought us here. And I think there's, you know, what do they say? You know, if you don't learn history, you're destined to repeat it. And so sometimes there's good and bad lessons to be learned by looking backward. You know, just a very prescient example right now, as many individuals, businesses are having conversations about how to cope with the coronavirus and how it's impacting businesses and the economy. Many people are looking back to the history of the way 9/11 impacted, you know, the travel industry around the world, you know, and security policies, and, you know, the Spanish flu back in 1918, because that's a similar health crisis. And so oftentimes those historical perspectives, you know, you could focus on the here and now, but sometimes there's much to be learned by looking back at what brought us to this point.
So true. And as we go through this, I have been really trying to find reference points. You know, 9/11 or, you know, World War II or Spanish flu. Great Depression. Like what are the things from that can illuminate our future? So the next one is process. And It brings to mind a story of a guy you may know, Marcus Sheridan, mm-hmm. who wrote They Ask, You Answer. And I remember, and he's very well known for teaching, you know, to mm-hmm. teach your customers, and if they have a question, answer it. And I remember seeing on his YouTube channel years ago where he had a little video, and he said, "Hi, you know, Marcus, and I'm going to show you the steps you need to do to winterize your own pool." And, you know, just first you do this, then you do that, and then you make mm-hmm. sure you do this. Well, after they posted it on their YouTube channel, the phone started ringing off the hook with people saying, "I watched your video a couple times. It's really good. Now, can you come winterize my pool?" Now, would that be an example of process?
Yes, 100%. You know, and our friend Jay Bayer always says, you know, you have to give away information snacks to sell knowledge meals, right? That's a perfect example of that. The instructional content, process-focused content, is often very educational in nature. Most processes we look up because we want to do them. But sometimes, just like the example you shared about from Marcus, you see that process only to realize there's no way I can complete that process. And now it's time for me to get a professional, you know, and again, for anyone who's listening in the midst of this current coronavirus, this is a perfect time to be creating instructional process-focused content, because never before have we been more limited in terms of where we can shop, who we can hire, and who we could bring into our homes to complete processes, right? So I've already had to look up a tutorial on how to fix my own coffee maker. I've already had to look up a tutorial on how to cut my daughter's hair. So like, this is the time, if you have an expertise, you know, start teaching your audience, stay top of mind, provide relevant content so they can continue to be your customer, continue to learn from you, so that when things change again, they can come back to you and still be a part of that relationship.
Well, the process also brings to mind this book I know called The Content Fuel Framework. So the author shows exactly how to do it all, and then somebody's going to try it, and they're going to say, wow, this is really good. Next time, let's bring her in too. or Melissa Agnes, who wrote Crisis Ready. It was a great book about crisis PR. And it was really comprehensive. And you really could hand it to someone and say, put a plan together. And, you know, somebody might have said to her, you're sharing all your secret sauce. And, you know, she would say, if I could speak for her, there is no secret sauce. I know how to do it. You know, just because you have a recipe doesn't make you a chef. So let's go to the next one.
Exactly.
Curation.
Curation is really fun. And for anyone who's feeling like maybe content creation is very intimidating, curation is a very good place to start, because you can actually curate other people's content as a really good starting point. The idea when you're focusing on curation is, much like a museum curator, you're going out and finding items that could be, you know, products, articles, podcasts, whatever the case may be, finding items that share some characteristic and collecting them to share with your audience to make it easier. So your resource page on your website is a great example of curated content. You may be, you know, curating links to relevant resources. Your podcast is a great example of curated content. You're going out and finding books that you think your audience would be interested in and curating all of those in one show, right? So another great example of this stuff is all the similar lists, right? Top podcasts to listen to, books for every social media marketer, you know, all those sort of curated lists are incredibly helpful for your audience, and oftentimes requires very little curation if you're simply grabbing links or examples from other people's content.
Right. So, listener, did you catch that? You're listening to some curated content. And what's great is because I get to read all the books, and then I get to talk to these smart authors, and it starts to make me look kind of smart. But it's really just, I'm just curating other people's stuff. Okay, so the next one is data.
Data is so fun. You know, and everyone, data, I don't care what anyone calls it, but
hey,
numbers.
Hey, foci, focuses,
here, right?
You know, come on.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea with data-focused content is to ask yourself, could I tell this story through the perspective of numbers? Is there an informational, data-based, you know, research-based, whatever the data is for your particular story, can we tell it through the numbers? So a good example here I like to use is, you think about a sports arena, and I know we're missing sports at the current moment, but imagine your favorite team, whether that's an NFL team, NBA team, and the venue where they play, where you go and watch them play. Now, they could tell you all about the venue and say, you know, yeah, here's, we have, you know, you can come here, here's how you get in the door, here's how you buy tickets. But how interesting would it be for you to hear, okay, how many seats are there? How many hot dogs do they sell during the average game? Mm-hmm. You know, how many security guards are on staff for the average game? How early do the players get there? How much Gatorade do they go through in the locker room? Really just going purely by the numbers, you know, what is a day in that venue like through the numbers? It would be a really interesting perspective that maybe you hadn't thought of before, that would surface some new information for the audience, right? So asking, is there a numbers-based way we can tell the story? And often when you prompt yourself to focus on the numbers, you can uncover new information, new data, new trends, you know, create a study, do a focus group. You know, it allows you to find brand new insights, and that can be incredibly valuable for you and your audience.
Yes, and you're in New Jersey, so immediately I thought of MetLife Stadium where the Giants and the Jets play, and all I could think was, how much beer is consumed when the Jets are playing versus when the Giants are playing? So somebody, some sports writer, please write that.
And is that celebratory beer or is it, you know, sadness beer? Who knows?
Yeah. So in data, there was one of many lines in your book that just spoke to me directly. It was on page 63, and you gave an example of a headline, and it said, new study, eating cheese daily increases your lifespan. And I don't even want to know if that's true or not. Although you did put a asterisk that said, this is hypothetical. Please don't change your cheese habits without data from actual cheese scientists.
I wanted to make sure I wasn't misleading anyone here.
Yeah, gosh, just when I thought I could go crazy on the cheese. So the next one is example. And, oh, excuse me, the
product.
Product. And now, what I wanted to say about product was, and I could be wrong, but so many companies, this may be the only thing they talk about. And
right.
How can you convince or encourage a company that only wants to talk about their product, perhaps maybe to put the products, to tell about the products in maybe the story form of customers?
So the reason I even included product at all is because there is that same pushback. So many brands only create product-focused content, and I didn't want to imply that they shouldn't create any product-focused content. But what I wanted to show is that it's part of a spectrum, right? It's part of a mix. It shouldn't be the only thing you're creating.
Mm.
When you're only creating content about your product, you are that person that's in your life, whoever they are, don't name names, that only talks about themselves. And nobody really likes to hang out with that person because you never get a chance to have an actual conversation, right? They're just waiting for their chance to talk about themselves. You don't want to give, that's not a good relationship to have with your audience, right? And so what's important to note is that these other focuses we've talked about here can also be in some ways product focused. You know, if you are MetLife Stadium and you're talking about a story by the numbers, or you're profiling, you know, the staff that paints the numbers on the field, I mean, that is still content about what you do. It's just not directly saying buy a ticket, buy a ticket, buy a ticket. And you can still talk in a tangential way about your services, about your products, about your offering, by doing these other focuses as well, without it always having to be an ask, a conversion, right? And I think that's an important thing to note, that it's strictly product-focused content is one of many types of content, many focuses that you should take.
Yeah, and by having that one column, you're able to say, look, you should talk about your product. Because, you know, sometimes I'll get pushback and folks are saying, oh, we can't talk about it. So, no, of course you can.
But you
need to pour some Velveeta on that broccoli to get to it. Okay, so the next last one is an example.
Yep.
And my mind started getting confused, not because your book is not clear, but it was like, what are examples? Give me an example of an example. But more seriously, how is that different from discussing people? I was getting those two confused.
Sure. So example is the idea that sometimes we try to tell a very big story when we should actually tell a small story that indicates the bigger idea. So the example I can offer you is to say, if you were trying to talk about a trend in your industry, right? If you were trying to talk about some recent data, you know, a trend in whatever your industry may be, you could try to tell the entire story of that trend and how it's impacting the entire world, but that would probably be lost on a lot of your customers, on a lot of your audience. A better way to tell that story is to find a single individual that represents that broader trend or a single example and tell that story. So I'll give you a more tangible example. So if you were a reporter right now, or you work in the food industry, and you're trying to tell a story about how small businesses, small restaurants are affected by the current coronavirus situation, you could just spit out a bunch of information and say, there's this many restaurants around the world and these many are shut down and here's what we project. Or you could find a local diner in your neighborhood that has changed their menu to make it easier for takeout, that has shifted some of their chefs over to delivery drivers, that has repurposed their front room as a packaging station for delivery orders, and tell the story about how they specifically, this one business, is adapting and representative of that broader trend. And that gives you a gateway to say, you know, and Joe's Corner Diner is just one of 70,000 local restaurants that are staying open and finding new ways to reach their customers during this time. So it really crystallizes your big story by telling the smaller example of that big story.
Mm-hmm. And it brought to mind the idea of showing the story of one of your customers.
Yes. So often we have a page on our website that says, you know, 100% satisfaction rate. You know, we've helped this many businesses. And it's like, that's wonderful. But of course you're saying that. How can I wrap my mind around all of that? So telling a specific, you know, a case study, a testimonial, a customer story, you know, that's one way to tell the bigger story by showing a smaller story. And that's really what example is about. Anytime you're telling a story to say, should I actually tell a smaller story that makes my point better?
Right. So the last one is one that I could be wrong, but I think that some companies may see this as some sort of third rail. And it's, to use a New York City subway term, opinion. And
yes,
it's my sense that a lot of companies are very fearful of having any kind of opinion or just taking a stand. So what would be an example of opinion where they could, I don't know, maybe put a toe in the water?
Yeah, well, I want to be clear that, you know, opinion-focused content, the goal is not for you to sort of draw a line in the sand and, you know, take a side on some heated political debate. Like, we're not talking about no third rails here. Really, what we mean here is just putting effort and clarity into how content is created. And by that, I mean being transparent about why selections are made. So a really good example, say you were doing, you know, Doug, say you were creating, you know, 10 new releases from April that are coming out. 10 new releases. That's it. It's just a list of 10 books that are coming out. That would be curated content, right? Because you've just picked 10 books with the shared criteria of coming out in April. Instead, or in addition, say you picked the 10 releases I'm most looking forward to. Now there's some transparency about this is not just a list. It's a list that I have put choice into how this list was created. It's adding a slight lens of human to it, right? Showing who's made it and why. And so oftentimes you can take existing content and just put some human to it. You know, instead of just saying, here's a product, saying, here's my take on a product. Here's our employees' take on this product. Instead of just walking someone through the steps, here's a person saying, here's how I would take those steps. It's just making it more human by putting a human opinion there. It doesn't have to be really taking, you can absolutely, if you want to say, here's our official company stance on, you know, some major political issue. That's pretty divisive. I don't know how I would recommend it unless it's important to you and your values as a company. You know, if you're an environmental company, then maybe you should take strong stances on environmental issues. That may make sense. But in most cases, opinion content is really just adding a human layer of curation to it to say that I'm a person is creating this, and here's how they did it and why.
Yeah, it seems like you can go pretty far in the human direction, and it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be controversial or alienating.
Right.
Just a couple quick questions before we wrap up about the formats. Okay, I listed what the formats were earlier. Explain why writing is number one.
Writing is number one because it's most accessible to most people. And I really tried to be as realistic as possible when I was creating the book. And I think it made sense. I tried to do them in the order of approachability for most people. You know, all of us write every day, even if it's in the form of, you know, a caption on Instagram, a text to our friend, you know, an email to your boss.
Graffiti on the wall.
Sure, that's writing too. Not always legible, but there it is, right? You know, we're creating writing in so many forms, you know. A grocery list is writing. And so I felt like that was important to say, like, this is a perfectly acceptable form. You don't have to go out and get a bunch of equipment or teach yourself a new skill. You absolutely have the skills to create written content. You know, as long as you have your phone or pencil and paper, you're good to go. And so I wanted to make it first. And also, I think it's the thing we think of most easily when we think of content. Like when I say the word content, most people think of, oh yeah, like a written blog post or something. And so, you know, it seemed natural to come first, and then hopefully we introduce some new and different formats the further you get down the list.
Yes, and for anyone that was in seventh grade and your English teacher told you you weren't a good writer, you need to read Anne Hanley's book, Everybody Writes, because she talks with great humor about how everyone at some point in their life was told they couldn't write.
Yes.
And it's not true. And when you read her book, you are forever, she's forever in your head as if she's sitting there next to you while you're writing, encouraging you, as only Anne Hanley can. So,
I love that book. I keep extra copies on hand because when somebody says I'm not a good writer, I know exactly what they need.
Oh, good for you. I'm so upset when I hear about people who think, oh, I can't write. It's like somebody who says, oh, I don't know how to do math. It's like, oh, come on. I just, You know,
and that's really like what this book was about for me is like, I don't like hearing people say, I'm not a storyteller. I'm not creative. I can't come up with content ideas. Like, yes, you can. You just need to be told you can and given a system to do it. I promise.
Yes. So let me ask quickly about video. Explain the differences between video, meaning pre-recorded, and live streamed video.
Well,
and I guess let me ask also, I'm not such a fan of live stream video, and I'm wondering if it's because, like you said earlier, live stream video could have been something that could have just been edited together. I mean, is the benefit of live video the audience interaction, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of advantages to live video when it makes sense. You know, most of us, when we watch a sporting event, we want to watch it live. And I think that's something we're learning now when we're all stuck with only pre-recorded sporting events from years ago, right?
Sure.
You know, there are certain advantages to live conversations, to live video, you know, live tours, live streams of events that are happening as they're happening. There's value in seeing that there. Conversations where we're interacting with our audience, there's value in being able to answer those questions live as opposed to, you know, having to answer those questions and then send it back out when someone's not asking that question anymore. So, you know, I think there is value in live, but the reason I spread them out separately is for that exact reason. I don't want people to conflate all of these things and think that they need to do something live just because it's well suited to video or vice versa. Like you said, it doesn't need to be a live video. It would be more polished and professional if it was done, you know, and then produced to some degree after. So I wanted to make it clear that they have different use cases and, you know, not every video needs to be live and not every live, you know, needs to be, or, you know, not every live situation needs to be streamed.
Yes. Well, now that you've seared this idea of focus and format into my head forever, and I thank you for that, I'm wondering if a lot of people doing live video said, let's do a live video without thinking about why. So just two other quick questions. I have a sense that you give a keynote somewhere, or you will soon once we're all back to traveling. And a lot of people come up and say, okay, I see those 10 formats, but what about this or what about that?
Yeah.
What are these aren't the only 10 in answer to the listener's unasked question, but also just rather than talking about others that you mentioned in the book, what are some of the ways that people should, you know, maybe evaluate and see if they make sense for them or not?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing I want to stress is that these formats don't exist in isolation of one another, just like the focuses don't. So in most cases, you aren't creating just one format. You know, most written content comes with imagery of some kind. You know, video includes audio as well. And, you know, this podcast probably has a show notes page with text and maybe images too, right? So don't think about these formats as independent of one another. The other thing about these formats is that they are platform agnostic. So when I, you know, writing a blog is not separate from an article, is not separate from an ebook. They're all writing, no matter what, you know, how long they are or how many words it contains. Same thing for a video. A video could be a quick 1 minute live, you know, video that you create and upload to YouTube. It could be a feature length film. So most of the time when we're thinking of, okay, what about, it's often a subcategory of one of these top 10 formats. That said, sometimes they require a different strategy for those different things. So, you know, people will talk about augmented reality, virtual reality, creating a game, creating a course. You know, those are often, again, combinations of some of these other things, visuals, audio, video, et cetera. So, you know, there are always going to be new applications of these formats, new places these formats can live. The really important things you just want to ask is whether they strategically make sense. So there's a couple different types of, I mean, gosh, there's so many questions. And we have a whole section in the book where we give you sort of a checklist of questions that you can ask to decide if a format makes sense for you. But you want to ask some questions before you actually, you know, decide to create it. And those are going to be things like, you know, why this format? What does it really offer us? What are its strengths? You know, what can we learn from people who are already creating in this format? It's something people are doing with TikTok right now, right? It's still technically video, but, you know, it has some different nuances. And why do we need to be there? Do we need to be there? Does it serve our audience, et cetera? You want to ask questions also when you're creating the content. So like, how is that process going to be different? What challenges might we need to anticipate? You know, are there different technology, different talent, you know, different resources that we need to be able to create? And then you also want to think about afterward, because you know, again, most things in our marketing are very carefully measured. They have a process around them. So whenever you're approaching a new format, you also want to acknowledge that we need to figure out, how are we going to measure this? How are we going to define success for this new format? You know, what's the timeline like to create something like this? Is that realistic to create something in this timeline? Is it going to actually align with our broader business goals, so that we're not, you know, back to the beginning of our conversation, just creating content just to put something on TikTok, you know? So really asking all kinds of questions. And again, there's a whole checklist in the book, you know, at toward the end there, if you want a real deep dive on how to workshop that.
Right. And also on page 23 and 24, there's 7 questions, and that's worth the price of the book. And I see so many companies that don't even answer. I'm not going to go through them, but it's the sort of thing that if companies just answered those 7 questions, they would do so much better. Last question. And this is where Melanie Diesel over-delivers. What's a content multiplier?
Oh my gosh. Okay. A content multiplier is one thing you can do to turn one piece of content into many. And so in the book, I give you a couple different ones. I give, you know, I think there's four or five
Let's
in
see,
here.
Time, location, resources, demographics.
Yeah, 4. Okay. So we had to decide which ones we're going to get to fit in the book, but we've got 4 in the book for you. And the idea is that when you have a single piece of content that works really well, it's worth saying, how can I get more out of that piece of content? So, you know, time being one of the multipliers that most of us can use. So if you were going to say, you know, Doug, we gave the example before about the, you know, the books coming out in April, well, that's something you could do in May, June, July, August, September,
right.
October.
It's like an exponential thing you have here.
Exactly. You can do summer books. You could do fall books. You could do back to school books. You could do holiday books. You know, you can pick different points in time and multiply your successful content into different time periods. Then you do the best of the year, the ones you're most looking forward to next year. So that one book list that you thought of has now become 10, 12, 15 different pieces of content, right? That are all unique. So the time multiplier, this is like a superpower to turn any one piece that works well for you or that you enjoy and multiply it and create so many more pieces out of that single idea.
The multipliers section, I almost had to go to the emergency room because I was starting to overload. I was starting to overdose on content. So Melanie,
look, I don't want you to go to the hospital, but I got to say that warms my heart to know that it got your wheels turning like that. That's awesome.
It was like, wah! Last, if readers took only one thing away from the book, Melanie Diesel, what would you hope it would be?
You are so creative, all of you. You have so many ideas inside of your brain. You have so many stories that are just waiting to be told, and all you need to do is figure out how to mine them. And once you do that, you will be unstoppable.
Amen. Amen. What's one thing a listener could do today to put in action one of the ideas from your book?
Make a list of 10 people associated with your business or your industry that your audience should know about or should know more about. And once you have that list, create a piece of content about each of them.
Hmm. Boy, I think people can, they probably already have 10 in their head right now.
That's right.
So what books have inspired your working career?
Well, it's funny you mentioned Everybody Writes by Anne Hanley. Like I said, one of my favorites. I recommend it to anyone who will listen, truthfully. Love that book. Highly recommend it. I also really love Exactly What to Say by Phil M. Jones.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, another really good book, and it's a word thing. You know, I like I said, I'm a journalist, so I'm always a word nerd first. That's sort of my first content language. So a book about the right words to use is, I mean, that was music to my ears.
Yes, that's a great book, and he's occasionally a New Jersey resident. I think
he
he's back in England right now, but he's written some terrific books, and he's a great guest, and yes, love those. And all the listeners who've bought his books have really enjoyed them. Are there any recent or upcoming books that you recommend or have heard about that you're looking forward to seeing?
Yeah, so this book actually has just come out recently, and I've not finished it yet. So in my mind, I'm still anticipating the ending, but Malcolm Gladwell's Talking to Strangers, which is really about sort of trust and truth and how we can identify truth and lies in strangers. And it's a really, really interesting book. And what I love about it, just being totally honest, I'm listening to the audiobook instead of reading the physical book. And he's taken a very interesting approach with the audiobook that is truly inspiring. You know, he's had individuals that he quoted, instead of just reading the book, he's had them read their quotes. You know, he's integrated audio from other formats. So from a purely creating something interesting through audio standpoint, I really admire the way the book's been put together. So I highly recommend if you're going to check out Talking to Strangers, you know, work your way through the audiobook because it's a work of art.
Interesting. I bought that book, I started it, and I haven't finished it. Now I'm inspired to finish it and then go get the audiobook. So
yeah.
At marketingbookpodcast.com, we're going to include links to your agency site, and well, I guess part of the book site is part of that, but we're going to include those links and links to your social media that you've included in your book. And I hope that listeners will at least click on your LinkedIn profile, learn about you, maybe connect and send a message and thank you for joining us on the show. And for you, dear listener, if you're listening on your smartphone and you subscribe to the Marketing Book Podcast on your favorite podcast app, all these links can be found right now by going to this episode and clicking on the show notes link. The name of the book is The Content Fuel Framework, How to Generate Unlimited Story Ideas. The author is Melanie Diesel. Melanie, thank you very much for joining us on the Marketing Book Podcast.
And thanks for letting me share my story.
And that closes the book on episode 279 of the Marketing Book Podcast. For more, check out this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or other helpful resource for whatever situation you find yourself in, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat and I'll try to point you in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. And if you'd like to record a question that could be played and answered on a future episode, email a voice recording to me at douglas@salesartillery.com. And please join us next time as we welcome Jeb Blunt back to talk about his new book, Inked, The Ultimate Guide to Powerful Closing and Negotiation Tactics That Unlock Yes and Seal the Deal. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast. This episode was produced by Jessica Ambrose.